Surely in your experience, you've kind of kept an eye on how these numbers would fit on a graph of some kind. How different is, first of all, how different is the process of doing the numbers and doing the estimates than it was 38 years ago when you started?
Well, I think the process is probably more scientific than it was 38 years ago. You know, now that we've got more computers and more analytical type software and things, we're able to find bad data in some of our survey data easier than we did in the past. So, meaning that the results should be better. I don't think we've ever been identified as having large discrepancies from the truth over time. It usually seems that by the end of the year, you know, sometimes some months there's a little bit more discrepancy from the final results than we find out at the end. But you know, all in all, it's the information that comes in from farmers and ranchers that we survey for every one of our reports, and that's really the important part is making sure that producers realize that the information they give us is important to some of the marketing information that they have at their leisure.
I suppose computers and other technology now enables you to get a quicker turnaround time from the time you collect the numbers until you actually put them out there. So they're very much up to date.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the information we collect over the telephone, of course, goes directly. As soon as we talk to the farmer, it's in the computer, and it's ready to be analyzed, where historically we would put it on paper, and then we'd have to, you know, either edit it and make sure it looked good, and then get it into some kind of a summary. I remember 30 years ago, we used to list about on long sheets of paper and add them up. So, things have changed a lot, and we're doing a lot more with a lot less people, too, so that makes a big difference.
How many farmers do you contact now?
Well, it really depends. During an August, September, October crop report where we forecast the yields, we'll talk to, in Missouri, we'll talk to 700 to 1,000 probably. They're all sampled randomly based on the commodities that we're looking at, based on size, you know. Obviously, we'll sample the guys that got 5 and 10,000 acres of corn, let's say, if we're after corn. A whole lot heavier than we do the guy that has 5 and 10 acres because he represents so much of the final total. So, and that's a way to keep the variation within the sampling down. So it's, and then, you know, when we get down to doing the county estimates, which we're doing at this time of the year where we try to estimate the acreage and the yield at the county level, of course, we're talking to maybe 15 to 18,000 people during this period of time. So it depends on what we're surveying and the timing and how big of a sample we absolutely have to have to remain statistically sound. So, you know, it sounds like a lot of gobbledygook, but that's kind of the way it is.
And when you say you're talking to these thousands of people, are you actually picking up the phone and talking to them, or are you sending out emails, or what do you do?
We send out paper questionnaires, or, you know, and if we don't get a response, we call them on the phone. Yeah, that's probably 90% of our data is collected either by phone or on paper. So, and it's getting to be where it's more on the telephone and less on paper. Historically, it used to be mostly paper.
Well, how big a staff do you have to make all these calls?
Not very many. We've got, we have some part-time people that come in. We probably have 20 to 25 at the most. They'll call for 4 or 5 hours each night. On the county, now for the county, we've got 6 weeks probably to do that, so we can stretch that out a lot longer. During a crop report in August and September, we've got about 5 or 6 days to contact 700 or 800. So we predominantly do most of the data collection with between 20 and 25 people on the telephone, yeah.
What are you reporting on now that you weren't reporting on 38 years ago?
A lot of economic information. In February, you know, we'll go out and we collect a lot of economic cost of production, cropping practices type information that goes into analyzing the actual costs of producing a crop, and we turn that over to the economists in USDA, and of course they do a lot of projections. You've heard of FAPRI here at the University of Missouri. They do a lot of projections based on a lot of the data that we've done, a lot of historic data, and then they project things to the future. So I would say a lot of economic stuff. Of course, we're doing a little bit more with organic, some of the specialty crops than we used to historically because there's an interest in it. So the secretary says he needs information on it, so we go out and try to put it together. And then we do some things cooperatively with like the Missouri Department of Agriculture. If they need something special, we have a cooperative agreement with the State Department of Agriculture. They can come to us and use our services to do projects for them. So they're not out doing exactly the same thing we're trying to do. So it works out really well.
How about the livestock stuff?
Well, of course, we do cattle and hogs. They're probably the main ones that we concentrate on. We do cattle twice a year and hogs every quarter because of the time it takes for hogs to reach market. We do a lot of weekly things with poultry. The broiler industry obviously is growing tremendously. And then we get into some specialty things like aquaculture, some trout, catfish numbers, the honey statistics. You know, there's not too many people overly interested in that, but there is a segment of the economy that is, and so that's predominantly our livestock. You know, we have done in Missouri about 8 years ago, we did a special study on equine, on horses, to put together a kind of a how much effect on the economy that equine or horses have, and we found out it was pretty tremendous back then. But that was a special survey that was put together for the Department of Ag and the equine industry, and of course they funded that, and we do things like that as well.
As I recall, that was back when people were all hot and bothered about getting some horse racing tracks in the state.
Probably. Yeah. So we can get some betting going on, right?
Is aquaculture a relatively recent thing? You weren't doing much aquaculture 38 years ago, were you?
No, we didn't. We didn't do any catfish or anything like that 38 years ago. Of course, I was in South Dakota then, so I didn't, you know, it was, the ponds were frozen, so it wouldn't have done any good. But I'm not sure when we started doing catfish, when catfish became popular to be farm raised, I believe we probably started doing that. I could look, but it's probably been back in the maybe the early 90s. It would be my guess.
Has that been a growth industry for farmers?
To some degree, yeah, I think so. I mean, not very many people are involved in it. Obviously, most of the catfish that are grown, of course, are grown in the Delta region. We've got some in southeast Missouri, and then it goes down into Mississippi and Arkansas and down the Gulf. That's a majority of our catfish is Mississippi in that area. So because of the water, you know, the temperatures, and, you know, they can't grow in really cold waters up north. And now one of the other popular things is starting to try to grow farm-raised shrimp. I know there's a few places around the country that are trying to do that. And then another thing that we've acquired over the years is now our agency takes care of what we call the census of agriculture. Every 5 years, we try to contact everybody in the nation that's involved in agriculture. And in Missouri, that's about 110 or 15,000 people. And that's where we can get a lot more demographic type information, you know, and we can cover some of the more specialty type, you know, tomatoes and grapes and things like that. So it's a ever changing business, I guess, as far as trying to collect data, because there's always somebody that wants something that's not available, so we're always trying to decide what we can do for the funding that we've got.
In 38 years, it seems to me, you probably have been pretty much on the front lines engaging the decline of the American farmer in terms of numbers of people who are actually working on the land.
Well, I don't know if we've engaged it, but we've definitely watched it, watched the number of producers decrease over the years, obviously very, very much so. And I don't think that's no secret to anybody. It's just farms are getting larger and there's less people involved. And now the risk is so much higher than it probably ever used to be. I was looking at some data the other day, and in the 70s, farmers would spend $2 hoping to get $3 in return, and that was about the cost of production versus the net income. And now it's you're putting up $3 to hopefully get $4 back. So, you know, the risk, and there's more, you know, more money being risked in agriculture, and it's getting to be much more of a business. We've seen that change over, you know, the last 30 and 40 years. It's really much more of a business than 40 years ago. You know, it was still a lifestyle, you know, a lot of small farms and things, but more it's a big deal now.
What has what have CAFOs done to your studies, your statistics? The last, I guess it's been 20 years or so since they really started taking off. How's that impacted them?
Well, it's really made it easier, as long as we can get the information from those large operations, those large vertically integrated operations. You know, I mean, what we will do now on contractors and contractees, let's say, in the poultry and the swine business, is we will go to the people that own the animals, rather than each of the maybe 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 contractees that are growing the animals for them. So we get the information from the owner. So we can get a larger portion of the total inventory from one report rather than going out and having to contact 200 people to get those same reports. So, as long as we get cooperation from the CAFOs, it makes it much easier.
Have you had any trouble getting cooperation from them?
Well, you know, I mean, not really. I mean, in general, we get real good cooperation because they know the value of information. I mean, they deal with it every day. They're dealing on really tight margins and marketing and things, so they realize the importance of data. But you know, periodically we always have trouble. You know, we have trouble throughout the whole industry. So.
Are they producing more cattle though in Missouri? Have our numbers gone up because of CAFOs being in business in Missouri?
Not really.
Yeah.
No. It's consolidating more animals in less hands. Like in hogs, we don't have very many operations at all anymore. I don't remember what it is, but maybe 1,800 people that raise hogs. Well, 30 years ago, we probably had, you know, 10,000. I don't know. I'd have to look. But, 30 years ago, we had a lot of people that raised feeder pigs. You know, they'd raise 300, 400, 500 feeder pigs, sell them to somebody. And now we have very few people that raise feeder pigs and sell them because of the vertical integration and the disease control and all that. So that's what's been the big change in both the poultry and the swine industry.
Have you seen a switch in the kinds of crops that are being produced? And I ask that because in the last 10 years or so, we've had a lot of emphasis on producing corn for ethanol. Has that produced any kind of a marked change in what people grow in Missouri?
No, I don't think so. Not really. I mean, we'll have, if you look at a chart over the last 40 or 50 years, yeah, we have, an increase in acreage, but it's a fairly steady increase. I think in about 6 or 8 years ago, when there was the big ethanol push, when the mandates were to be talked about and things, we had a spike in acreage, and then the next year it dropped right back down. Most Missouri producers really, you know, for the good of the land, they almost have to follow some kind of a rotation between corn and beans because of the fertility in the soils and all that. So really, it's just been a steady increase. If you look at it historically, it's just a steady increase in acreage. And, it hasn't been a steep increase, though, because, you know, we've only got so much land, so... And we've pretty much always raised corn and beans anyway, so it's not like we're switching from crops. One thing we've seen a slight decrease in, probably in the last 6 to 8 years, has been in the wheat acre, winter wheat. Historically, we've been 1 to 1.23 million acres, and we got down to 300,000 here a few years ago. So there's some changes in things like that, so... And then there's less diversity on most farms. I think that's what we see, probably the biggest thing. less diversity, meaning, you know, if I'm a crop farmer, I'm a crop farmer. I don't have a bunch of livestock running around, or I don't have some hogs and chickens. Whereas 40 years ago, you know, we had a little bit of everything, a few dairy cows and things.
Well, you mentioned that they're not making any more land.
Yeah.
Does that make your service even more valuable, the fact that the amount of land available for production agriculture seems to keep shrinking? Does that make what you guys do in terms of analyzing numbers more meaningful?
Boy, you'd have to ask the people who use the numbers, yeah. But I'd like to say yes. I'm not sure, but anytime there's a shortage, and you know, we keep hearing all this year on the corn numbers. You know, it was concern that we were going to get down to carry out stocks being so low that we may, you know, we could have problems. We have to start rationing corn. And we saw big spikes in the prices because of that talk and things like that. So I think that's where the value of our numbers are, is us being able to identify the size of the crop as early in the year as we possibly can to try to prevent a lot of that fluctuation. Now, you know, we can come out with a number the 10th day of September, and the 12th day of September we have a weather event that changes the whole picture. And that's something that we can't and nobody can predict. So that's why a lot of times the numbers will change from one month to the next, is because from some unforeseen event, or we get some tremendous heat like we did this year in July and August, that we were wet, and then all of a sudden it turned off and turned super hot at a bad time when corn was late planted corn was going into pollination, and you know, the effects of that are just unknown until after it happens. So predicting crop yields and production is it's not an exact science, but we use scientific methods the best we can to reach those.
If you were to look at these numbers over these long years, would there be a point where you could kind of say modern herbicides and genetically modified grains have started showing a trend of increased productivity?
Oh, I think that's absolutely, you can, because you know, if we're not increasing our acreages but we're increasing our production over the years. I mean, I looked at some numbers, and if you look at the change in population from maybe the 70s till now, our productivity per acre on corn and soybeans, those are the ones I looked at, and really wheat as well, have increased at a faster percentage than the population has increased. So that would say then that we, without changing the number of acres that we're using to grow these crops, we're still able to keep up with the food production for the increased population. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, we've, over the last 40 years, and, you know, you kind of caught me because I don't have any of that in front of me right now, but we've increased yield per acre on corn I think it was the U.S. I was looking at, like 40%. And population has been, you know, about 30%. So as long as we can continue to do that, and you know, obviously a lot of it's been genetic traits, it's been GMO type stuff, it's been herbicides, it's been all of this kind of stuff, it's been cropping practices, it's been no-till. I mean, you can just go down the line and find reasons that have added together to help us increase the yield. I mean, and that's a very steady trend line. Now, all we can do is assume it's going to continue. It's going to continue. Will it continue? Monsanto said it will. The researchers at Monsanto and some of these companies claim that sky's the limit. So we'll see.
I know this is kind of a statistics is often kind of a day-to-day sort of a thing, but have you ever thought that this accumulated amount of information that you have helped assemble through all these years is going to be something that people are going to be looking at 100 years from now as history and interpreting some things about 20th and 20th century Missouri farmers and what their conditions were and what they were doing?
Well, I'm sure somebody will, yeah. I mean, I constantly have people looking for data that's 100 years old today. You know, they want to say, well, what did we do in the 1900s, you know? And how have things changed from the 1900s to the 2000s and looking at different areas, and you look at the numbers of farms and you look at the diversity of farms, and absolutely people will look at that. And they'll marvel at the ability of the American farmer to continue doing what he's done for years, without a whole lot of recognition from most of the consumers.
Well, what are you going to do once you walk out that door in a few days?
Well, I don't know. I'm gonna rest, take it easy probably through the winter, and check with, see what's available. If anybody has anybody that, if they need somebody to sweep the floor or something, I may be up for it. My wife will probably be sick of me by spring, so I don't know.
Well, you might be the guy looking at my checkout sheet at Walmart before I go out the door. Are you a farmer yourself, Gene?
Well, I grew up as a farmer. I grew up on a farm. No, I don't farm now.
So your successors aren't going to be calling you wanting to know what you're doing with your land?
No. I grew up in South Dakota and grew up on a farm up there. So, kind of got through college at a time when it didn't look like the future of farming was going to be real rosy. And so I took another route, and so here I am, 40 years later, probably. And it's been fun. It's the industry in Missouri, the farm organizations and the commodity organizations, I've had a great 11 years here in Missouri with dealing with producers, gotten to know a lot of people, and it's really been fun. And hopefully they think the same thing. Hopefully they think that we've done some things that are good. And we don't often get too much praise. You know, most of the time we hear things about why we made the price go down. So, numbers will do anything, do whatever the speculators think it should do, I guess.
Well, you didn't make the prices go down. It's what the people that used your numbers made happen.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, you can try to convince some farmers of that. but I take a little heat once in a while. But a lot of times it's all in fun. But they understand. I think most people in agriculture understand the need. You know, I've had people tell me that you can't. It's hard to manage something if you can't measure it. And so somebody's got to do the measurements. And we've offered an unbiased look at it. A lot of other people that are trying to put numbers out there, sometimes they have a profit motive in what the result is, so hopefully we're able to keep things a little bit more level on a level playing field. But it's been fun. Yeah, I don't know what I'll do for sure. I may poke around. Hopefully I can stay involved with some form of agriculture, at least here in mid-Missouri.
You mentioned a minute ago that you got into this business because farming didn't seem to have much of a rosy future 4 decades ago.
Yeah.
As you look at these numbers now that you've accumulated all these years and in the last couple of years as you start to head out the door, what do you think about farming's future? Does it have a rosy future?
Oh, I think it looks great. I mean, I don't think it's ever looked any better, even though costs are high. I think you're going to see more young people getting involved with in farming. I think we have in the last probably 5 years, but I think you're going to see a lot more young people being willing to take the risk, because we have seen some reward for that risk over the last several years. And I think most economists that are looking out into the future 5, 10, and 20 years, again, we've only got so much land. We've got a lot of mouths to feed. So I think it's turned the corner, probably turned the corner in the mid 90s, I would say. Started to turn the corner in the mid 90s. You know, the 80s were ugly. People were losing money, on livestock. They were losing money on crops. But our exports have really done well, you know, and obviously our export business is important to all segments of agriculture, whether it be the crops or the livestock. So, yeah, I do. I think I think you could probably talk to anybody right now thinking that. But they're putting a lot of risk out there. Like I say, you know, they're betting $3, hoping to make $4, and hoping to get $4 back. So you're betting $3 to make $1. And I don't know if that's if you can get those odds in Las Vegas or not.
Well, I've been to Las Vegas enough to know that I don't want to go to Las Vegas and make any bets.
In Las Vegas, you don't have to worry about it rains or whether you got a hailstorm or whether you have a drought or whether you have a disease or whether you have it's just amazing. So the risk is amazing, and we're risking a lot of money, but luckily we've had a pretty good reward. We could have had a little better summer this year in Missouri and had a lot more reward, but it didn't pan out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Gene, good luck.
Well, appreciate it. Thanks for getting hold of us, and encourage producers to continue to respond to the surveys. And we're in this business really to make sure that producers have the same information that everybody else has, so they can make the right marketing decisions.